Hello, listeners. Before we get to the show, I'd like to tell you about an event that we're planning in Houston, Texas on July 9th. Ryan, you want to tell people about it?
Well, if you're a listener of the show, you know that me and Tate go buy real estate. Well, we are going to lift up the tent and show you all the details on how we find properties, select sites, conduct due diligence, and we're actually going to do a bus tour in Houston, Texas on Wednesday, July 9th from 12 to 4. And then after, we're going to have a happy hour at Tall Yard Brewing in Sugar Land, Texas, which is just south of Houston, at 4:30. And it's going to be a lot of fun. So you can come meet other investors for a day of learning. We've set the time so that you can fly in and fly out same day from any coast or hub city. So I'm excited to invite our listeners. Come meet me and Tate. Come see us do property due diligence, learn about self-storage investing, learn about real estate investing, meet other investors. So I'm excited. But Tate, back to you.
It's going to be a lot of fun. You can come for the bus tour, you can come for the happy hour, you can come to both. We hope to see you there. Go to passiveincomepilots.com/Houston to RSVP.
Space is limited. See you soon.
Welcome back to Passive Income Pilots, everyone. Tate Duryea and Ryan Gibson here for your listening pleasure. What's up, Ryan?
Not much. Every once in a while, we have to protect the thing that makes the money, which is
exactly
your medical.
Yep. Yep. Every 6 or 12 months, we got to go in. We're all in that boat. So we had Dan Munlux from Aeroman Med on the show way back on episode 67. Go check it out. It was a great episode. That was almost a year ago. We talked about that in the show. But Dan is an XF-18 guy, went through medicine, you know, has Wingman Med is this. He's an AME who is very pilot-centric and has built a career on understanding the FAA, understanding what the FAA wants to see, and he helps pilots get through really complex situations. So, Ryan?
Yeah. You know what? Passive Income Pilots, we've had a medical expert on about every 6 months, so it's in lockstep with your medical. So if you've been listening to all 120 episodes or so, here's your another warning that we want you, as our listener, to go get preventative treatment, to go through this medical simulator. We really don't want you to lose your medical. We also know that there's pilots out there that are suffering from, you know, alcoholism or mental health, or they've got some ailment they don't want to talk to anybody about because they're super afraid about it. And they don't feel like they can talk to anybody except the person that's going to get it, that's going to take away their medical.
Right.
And that's just simply not the truth. We've heard from a handful of our listeners saying, hey, I listened to your episode and I didn't even realize that these types of services existed. And it literally saved my career. So, you know, some of these episodes, you know, if you're listening to this and you're not a pilot, you can skip this one.
Yep.
This one is not going to be your, we're not talking about necessarily stock market investing or passive income or real estate, but for airline pilots and for aspiring pilots that are in aviation, this one is really important. So, and we drop a massive nugget that I have never heard of, and Tate, both have never heard of, what you can do if you're over 40. You better stay on
Genius.
This show, because there's something you can do before you go to your medical that can really be telling to help make sure you pass, right? So
Dan has helped thousands of pilots keep their medicals with his company. Really an amazing person to have in your Rolodex. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Welcome to Passive Income Pilots, where pilots upgrade their money. This is the definitive source for personal finance and investment tactics for aviators. We interview world-renowned experts and share these lessons with the flying community. So if you're ready for practical knowledge and insights, let's roll.
Dan, welcome back to the show. How you been?
Tate, great to be here. Thanks for having me back. I've been fantastic.
It's been almost a year. It was July 9th of 2024 when we had you on the first time. It was episode 67. If you haven't listened to that, go back. But for anybody that hasn't heard your background, you want to fill people in?
Yeah, absolutely. So I founded Wingman Medical along with my partner, Dr. Keith Roxo. And we came to that after a fairly long career in the military. Both of us actually met while we were in flight school, learning to be F-18 pilots in the Navy, and started out our professional careers doing that for about a decade before we both transitioned into medicine. So at this point in my career, you know, I have that initial introduction as a, you know, 10 years as an F-18 pilot. I then went to medical school and I did residencies in both family medicine and aerospace medicine. I was a flight surgeon in the Navy for the bulk of my my Navy medicine career. While I was in the Navy, I also got to fly airplanes while I was practicing medicine. So I got some time in citations and then flew briefly as a T-45 instructor. And at this point, I'm now retired from the Navy. That's new since our last podcast, actually. And right now I'm working full time in San Diego as a senior HIMSS AME and focusing most of my professional time on helping people get through the FAA medical certification process without any undue delays. We do some other stuff. I'll stop there. And what looks like you had a question.
What I mean, I think it's so. You have such an interesting background with so much perspective. What is like the number one thing that pilots get wrong in medicals that just trips them up? What's the hang up? I mean, that you wish you could tell everybody that, like, hey, make sure you do this, you know?
Great question. And I think this is the same thing we were talking about just briefly before we went on air, you know, and we even, you know, kind of our foot stomper is prepare for your medical exam like it's a check ride, you know, and that's the bottom line, I think. I think many pilots, especially ones who have been healthy for many, many years and, you know, maybe, you know, start to develop some medical conditions or are getting older to a point where those things become more common, they'll show up to a medical exam with a medical examiner and, you know, and find out about their medical problems there, you know, and where you would never do that if you were going to say, add on an ATP rating or get a new type rating. And so, you know, I think just with a little bit of due diligence and, you know, and actually having a relationship with a primary care doctor who can, you know, make sure that you're healthy before you go to try to convince the FAA that you are, you know, I think a little bit of preparation goes a long way.
I have a question on that. I'd like to walk through the primary care doctor versus AME discussion, because I hear a lot of pilots saying, you know, I got this thing, but I don't want to go get it checked out because then the FAA is going to find out about it, right? And I've actually been in that situation. I had this cough that wouldn't go away for like 6 months, and I didn't want to go and get it checked out because I didn't want them to tell me that I had like asthma that gets triggered by when you go for a run or something like that. And it's gone away, but I was nervous. I was in that position where I was nervous to go get it checked out because I'm like, well, what if this guy reports it to, or I have to put it on my medical. How does that work? How do you develop that relationship with that primary care doctor and still feel like you're not shooting yourself in the foot?
Yeah, great question. You know, so the first thing I'd say is, I think at the same point, people often don't prepare for their medical exam. They sometimes overestimate how draconian the FAA is going to regard new medical conditions. The fact of the matter is, as long as you can demonstrate that you're under appropriate guideline-directed modern medical care for whatever the condition is, you know, chances are you can get your certificate. And that's true whether you have COPD or even if you've had some major things like, you know, nowadays, insulin-dependent diabetes or heart attacks or stroke, you know, even after major, major medical events like that, you can successfully qualify for a medical certificate as long as you can show that you're safe based on the care that you're getting. You know, my advice to, you know, to all pilots and all, you know, all my patients in general is if you think you might have a problem, you know, don't hide that because you think it might affect your medical certification. Go to your doctor, be proactive about it and get treated, you know, and then once you identify what's going on, treat the condition and reduce the symptoms to a point they're not going to distract you while you're in the cockpit. You know, you have the medical record that the FAA is going to want to see so that you can successfully qualify for a medical certificate, you know?
Yeah. Dan, on this topic, the philosophy that I've always kind of heard is don't treat your AME like your primary care doctor, right? And don't treat your primary care doctor like your AME, you know, the time to disclose and find all these, you know, find out what's really wrong with you is not during your first class medical appointment.
Right.
You know, it's on the other doctor appointment. Right. And it's like, that's the time to really check yourself out. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, you know, I've heard some pilots say that you're going to have one doctor on the side who you tell all your problems to, and then you're going to kind of polish things up, and you're going to put your best foot forward with your AME. And I don't agree with that. You know, the FAA is very clearly asking you, have you ever in your life had any illness, disability, or surgery? And they're looking for a pretty comprehensive report of what that is. So I think to your question, you know, it's important to understand what an AME does compared to what a treating physician does. But it's more important to understand what's happening at the actual medical examination for your FAA certificate that what's going on with that, right? Because it makes sense in many cases for to use the same exact treating physician that you do for to get your medical certificate with the FAA. The difference is that just recognize when you schedule that certification exam, what your physician is doing, what the AME is doing in that appointment is just like a DPE would be doing if you go for that check ride. They're evaluating you in that moment and trying to determine, are you safe to hold a medical, you know, based on that exam. And so it might be something as simple as, you know, you haven't updated your prescriptions or you forget your glasses in the car. If you show up and you can't read the 2020 line as a commercial pilot, well, guess what? I can't issue your certificate. You know, I might know full well that you can see perfectly fine with your glasses on, but that doesn't do me any good, right? Now, by the same token, if I'm your AME and you schedule an appointment with me the week before your exam and we go over everything, well, yeah, now I can provide treatment advice and I can get you tuned up for that appointment and we can fill in the gaps that, you know, we want to make sure you get new labs related to your cholesterol and, you know, make sure your prescription's up to date. And I can kind of coach you through that process, you know, provided that you haven't given me your confirmation number and I don't have to report my findings to the right. FAA. So, and that goes back to what I said in the beginning, you know, whether it's the same guy that does your FAA medicals or whether it's a different doctor, that doesn't matter so much, but make sure that you're actually proactively taking up, looking after your healthcare and that you're actually going to your doctor with an eye toward, you know, maintaining your health and making sure that you're not missing anything. Because exactly what you said, coming into your AME is not the time to get diagnosed with a new medical condition.
Something as simple as like, hey, I need an update to my eyeglass prescription, you know, and it's like the time to figure that out is not during the test.
Right. And that's true. I mean, I think, you know, the eyeglass example is a really comical one, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I've diagnosed people with cardiac arrhythmias, you know, at their exam. And, you know, and a lot of people don't know this part, right? But, you know, I think most first class pilots or most airline pilots over 40 know that they have to get an EKG every year. I think not many of them know that you don't have to get the EKG from your AME, right? You can go to the primary care doctor that you use for your medical care. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have an EKG done within, you know, 60 days preceding that, your FAA exam, I can just take that, that EKG and
that's
upload it.
That's a hot tip.
So that's a great example. In the same way that it makes sense to update your eyeglass prescription, it's a pretty good idea to know if you have a cardiac arrhythmia before you show up at your AME's appointment. Because guess what? There's a fairly large number of arrhythmias that are perfectly fine for you to have, and I can still issue a certificate as long as we do some extra investigation. Maybe get a, you know, do a more extended rhythm monitor and maybe do a, you know, cardiac ultrasound. But there's many cases where you might have an EKG abnormality. But if I can coach you through getting the right documents before you show up and see me for your exam, well, then it's not an issue. Whereas if we find out on the day of your exam, you know, we don't have as many options.
That is a massive tip. I mean, Huge. I did not know that. And I'm over 40. So thank you.
Dan, what are your thoughts on, you know, I didn't want to get to this question this early, but what separates Wingman Med from your typical AME? And do you think that a typical AME would be able to coach you through that? If you brought them your EKG from your primary care doc from, let's say, a month ago, and you said, hey, I want to check this out with you beforehand, how capable do you think the vast majority of AMEs are versus what you do?
How to answer that diplomatically? Of course. Let's just say there's a pretty wide practice variation among AMEs, and you go from, you know, on one end of the spectrum, you have guys that are maybe brand new, only doing this kind of part-time, you know, some other people who are doing it at the later stages of their career, and, you know, but in general, you know, most AMEs are not really focusing on aviation medicine as a primary part of their practice. I think, you know, just speaking about the average AME, it's typically someone who has a very busy clinical practice of their own. They might not have really done much training other than the FAA's own course and, you know, in aerospace medicine. And they're seeing 20, 30 patients a day, and sure, they'll build in an FAA exam as one of those appointments. And you know, and they, if you're perfectly qualified, they're more than capable of guiding you through that. You've got some others that are doing aviation exams on a more full-time basis. Maybe they've combined that service with, like, you know, with DOT exams for truck drivers, for instance, but they're just kind of trying to move people through as fast as they can, and they don't necessarily have time to really drill down in detail about it. What really sets us apart is, you know, the actual in-person medical exams that we do are a relatively small part of our professional practice. Really, what we've done is focused in on, you know, on knowing everything that we possibly can about the FAA standards and what to do if you have something that isn't straight down the middle and you're not checking no on everything in on your medical history. And so, you know, what we do with, you know, probably 2/3 of our, you know, of our professional time is just help people with problems figure out what they're going to need to prepare for the, you know, for the FAA. And it's very labor intensive, you know, and I think where many AMEs don't do that as well as we did, it's not because they're bad doctors. It is not because they don't want to help you, but, you know, if you pay them, you know, let's say what's an average AME exam cost, you know, $150, $200, yeah, maybe more, maybe less, I don't know. But, you know, if you're paying them for 15, 20 minutes of their time to do that exam, you're paying them to answer, are you qualified? Yes or no. And if they answer that question, that ends it. You know, where figuring out the rest of it is labor intensive. And we typically, you know, we spend hours of time reviewing documents, coaching our clients through the process, and, you know, and helping to, you know, figure out how to get through that as best they can.
And this is why we want to have you back on the show, because, I mean, what an incredible resource for our listeners to have, that if you have something that your primary care doctor identifies, you don't know what to go do with that, call Dan.
Yeah. Here's another thing. So
sorry to interrupt you, but I do want to, before it my stream of consciousness abandons me, I think a really good practical tip, there are many, many good AMEs out there across the country. A lot of pilots may not know this, though. You know, if you show up, once you provide that confirmation number that you get from MedExpress, once you give that to the AME or one of their staff and they type it in the computer, they're obligated to submit that exam to the FAA within 2 weeks of typing that in the computer. Right. And that's a requirement, and they're audited on that, and they really don't have much flexibility there. So if you have a problem, you know, and you want to see if your AME in your hometown is capable of coaching you through that, a good strategy is to see if they offer consultation appointments. And there may be an out-of-pocket cost associated with that. But, you know, sit down with them. Don't give them that confirmation number, and don't try to start your certification exam. But just simply sit down with them and have the conversation to see if that's something that's in their area of expertise. And they'll probably tell you. We get a lot of referrals from AMEs who recommend us after a consult like that, and because they're upfront with pilots that they just don't have the time or desire to help out with those things.
So I got two questions. Who would be your perfect, like, who's giving those consultations? You know, what can you just kind of generically describe? Like, is it older, younger? Is it out of shape? Is it heart condition? Who typically do you get the most consultations from? Is there a certain ailment or something that's going on that's most common?
So it really depends on the age group, I think. You know, our model, any new client that you know, that is interested in hiring us, we start them out with a free 15-minute consultation, and that just gives us a chance to kind of determine, hey, do you have a chance of getting your medical certificate or not? You know, because we don't like working with lost causes, and so. You know, so we hear from a lot of people, many more than actually end up, you know, paying us to help with their application. So, you know, so I would say, you know, in younger pilots, so people are coming for their first medical certificate, I think the most common thing, especially in today's generation, is, you know, our younger pilots who had a history of, let's say, ADHD, or particularly during COVID era, may have been diagnosed with some form of anxiety or depression during the during the COVID era shutdowns, and had recovered and are doing fine, but they had these lingering, you know, historical medical diagnoses, ADHD, depression, adjustment disorder, and so forth. So I think that's a big segment of the younger population that we see. Mental health issues continue to be a relatively big issue as pilots move on in their 20s and 30s. The FAA, their certification standards are catching up to sort of the modern world that we live in. You know, it used to be 20 years ago, mental health stuff was very, very stigmatized, and only people who had significant pathology were really seeking treatment. Well, I think it's pretty common knowledge that's not the case anymore. Many people are very functional and are just, you know, going to seek mental health care just to kind of optimize their well-being. And, you know, and the FAA's policies are moving to be able to catch those types of people. But there's a lot of people in their 20s and 30s that have those types of issues. You know, and then as you move into, you know, closer to middle age, you start to see diseases of older age or of middle age. So diabetes is super common. That's one that crops up pretty frequently. Many issues related to cardiovascular conditions. So that can be anything from, you know, simple high blood pressure to more exotic things like arrhythmias and, you know, and frank coronary heart disease. Injuries is another big category. So, you know, particularly head injuries, and how to get that on record with the FAA is another big category of things that we see. And then I think issues related to DUIs and substance abuse are another kind of big segment of things that we see.
Wow. What the EKG thing was such a great tip, and that just sort of came out of nowhere. What other tests can you get out of the way, or what other things you can do in advance of your medical?
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the most important things you can do as a pilot, and this is regardless of age, is, you know, get yourself a good primary care physician.
How would you go find if somebody isn't sure that they're with the right primary care doctor, or they don't have one, what's the best way to go out and find a great primary care doctor?
That's an hour long conversation itself. No, I think a lot of people view doctors as sort of a commodity service these days. You know, people expect a certain level of expertise. They expect that when you show up at a clinic, that the doctors are going to know what they're doing, and you know, and they don't do a lot of due diligence. And I think they feel bad about, you know, about firing their doctor and moving on to another one. So, you know, what does a pilot need in a doctor, right? Certainly they need somebody that they can get in with and get scheduled in a reasonable amount of time. You know, they need somebody who's going to be willing to discuss treatment options and, you know, and maybe tailor what they're going to prescribe according to, you know, to FAA standards, which, you know, may take a little bit more time during the appointment. You know, and they're going to need somebody who documents care well, because even something as simple as starting a blood pressure medication, you know, for your AME to give you a medical certificate, you're going to have to get a note from your doctor that says, you know, doesn't have to be extensive, but they're going to have to say what the medication is. They're going to have to verify you're not experiencing any adverse effects or side effects from that medication. And, you know, and they're going to have to say that you're stable. They don't expect to make any changes to the, you know, to that treatment. Pretty simple requirements. But if the doctor you see is in another room in 15 minutes, and you don't get a chance to, you know, ask any questions, well, that's not the right doctor for you. So I think my advice would be, you know, there's not some secret, you know, treasure trove of great primary care doctors for, you know, for pilots somewhere. I think the best thing you can do, and this is why one of the reasons I say, hey, start early. You know, if you're 22, 23, don't really need a doctor, start looking for him early. And the things you're looking at is, you know, can you get in to see him? Are they going to spend some time with you? Do they ask, you know, answer questions? Are you comfortable with them as a professional? And if you're not, you know, fire him and move to the next one. And then, you know, just by trial and error, find somebody who you think is going to meet that standard. And the benefit of that is if you start early, you know, and you're used to that routine, by the time you're 35 or 40 or 45 and, you know, start having issues, well, now you already have a track record with somebody and you're comfortable with that working relationship.
Amazing. So if somebody's in their, let's say 30s, 40s, 50s, take these three buckets. What are some tests that they should be doing with their primary care physicians?
So I think, you know, this basically falls along the line of, you know, just basic guideline directed care. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, leading causes of death, depending on your age group. And, you know, across the board, the easy one is cardiovascular conditions are, you know, are going to be a number one killer for folks. Cancers kind of come in there pretty close, you know, behind that, right? So the screening stuff that you're going to do is largely related to that. You know, as you're coming into your mid to late 30s, what you're looking at is just making sure there's no early signs of cardiovascular disease. So you're looking for very simple screening tools, you know, things like, is your blood pressure well controlled? Is your cholesterol elevated? Are there any early signs of diabetes? You know, and those are very simple lab tests, doesn't involve anything invasive. You know, I think most primary care doctors would do that as a matter of course. As you start moving into your 40s, it gets a little bit different between, you know, whether you're male or female. You know, and ordinarily there's a lot of controversy as to when you should start screening for breast cancer and prostate cancer, respectively. Some guidelines will say 40, some will say closer to 50. But I think as a pilot, because there's so many career implications for it, I think early cancer screening is probably a good idea. So starting around the age 40, you need to start looking at things like, you know, for women, breast cancer, for men, prostate cancer screening. And start doing those on, you know, on the interval that's recommended by your doctor. For everybody, as you get into your mid-40s, more cancers start coming to play. So making sure that you stay up to date on your colonoscopy, you know, and as unpleasant as that is for, you know, for everybody.
Can't wait.
You know, that's important to start that on, you know, on time. You know, and then as you move beyond that, you really can, you know, it's going to be, as long as you have that consistent relationship with your, you know, with your doctor. There's some preventive health things you can do in terms of recommended vaccines, and you know that gets into a more nuanced discussion. But you know, but if you start to see any kind of early abnormalities on any of those basic tests that you do, well, then you can, you know, you should follow up with, you know, with the recommended testing for that. So that might be where you get into cardiac MRIs or treadmill testing or kind of some more advanced cardiovascular stuff.
Yeah, I've had two friends in the last 12 months have heart attacks. One was very fit. And one was decently in good shape. And both of them said they should have been getting CT scans sooner to help, you know, detect the potential for a heart attack. Is that something that you would put on your short list of things to do?
Yes and no. You know, and this is a hot topic when it comes to FAA certification. So whenever you order a test, you need to be prepared to do what gets recommended afterwards, right? So for most people, and I, you know, obviously you probably don't know, we certainly don't want to discuss their medical care, you know, on the air, right? So I don't know what their cholesterol numbers were like. I don't know if those basic things were, you know, would have suggested that they got to get the cardiac CTs. But this comes up a lot with our clients where, yeah, you go and get the cardiac CT and, you know, it comes back and it's got some sort of intermediate, difficult to interpret result. And so your cardiologist says, yeah, we don't really need to do anything. We just need to watch it. But then as you report that to the FAA, they're going to say, well, no, it's not good enough to watch it. We need to know if this is a safety risk or not. And so the FAA is going to require that next step in the diagnostic workup. And so that causes a lot of consternation among pilots because, you know, on one hand, they have a doctor saying that, you know, well, we don't know what's going on. Let's just watch it. On the other side, they've got the FAA who's approaching it from a public safety perspective saying, hey, we don't know what's going on. We need to find out definitively. And, you know, and then, so if you go down the road of screening, you do have to be prepared to, you know, to actually get to the bottom and answer the question you're asking.
That's awful. Cause that's just going to discourage people from going and doing it because why would you want to go and cover a problem that, you know, I mean, that's too bad.
But, and that's the mindset. That's a difficult discussion, right? But think about it. The reason you're asking the question, the reason you're getting that cardiac CT is to find out if you got a, you know, if you've got a blockage that needs to be treated, right?
Yeah.
And if you get to the point of we don't know the answer, well, then you're no better off than when you started. And so, from my perspective, you know, if I get an intermediate, you know, kind of result, and I don't, you know, and my cardiologist can't tell me definitively that my cardiac vessels are wide open. Well, hey, guess what? Before I put my wife or one of your family members in the back of my airplane and go fly around, I'm going to figure out if I'm, you know, if I'm a heart attack waiting to happen or not. You know, and I think so. You just have to be prepared to get that answer.
Yeah, I'd like to get back to my original question though, because I asked a question, then Tate, you went on like three questions after that.
Sorry.
We're like jumping in.
Yeah.
What other things before that medical appointment? We started saying, hey, start with a good primary care doctor, and then we kind of went on a tangent with that. But what other things should we do to prepare? Because I think that's what, I mean, that EKG thing is awesome. And, you know, okay, what other things should we be thinking about?
Well, I think, you know, one of the more important things, we actually developed something called a MedExpress simulator that we have on our website.
Yeah, this is great.
And the purpose of that is to let people kind of rehearse their FAA medical, right? And so I think probably the most important thing, you know, other than just being proactive about your health and, you know, and staying and, you know, maintaining your wellness is, you know, take a good honest inventory about how you're going to answer that form, right? And the FAA, because the FAA is casting a wide net. And if you answer that honestly, they are literally asking, have you ever in your life had any illness, disability, or surgery? So if you really want to parse that down to the language on the form, you could make an argument that they actually do want to know about the time you were prescribed antibiotics when you were 12 years old and the time that you broke your arm and, you know, in high school football or whatever. I mean, it's okay to take some editorial license and omit some of those things that are long resolved and not a factor. But as you're getting ready for your exam, you should go through, you know, if you want to use the one on our website, you can do that for free. If you want to pay for the option to have, you know, one of us go through it and kind of review how it might affect your medical certification, there's a paid option to do that. And in fact, if you're an AOPA member, we have a partnership with them. One of their staff actually review the answers and provide you feedback as well. Point being, if you're answering that, you know, honestly, and you're listing all your medications and you're looking up whether those are on the, you know, the FAA's disqualifying list, and, you know, you're answering, you know, you're answering some yes answers on your medical history, you know, if you don't know how each one of those yes answers is going to affect your medical certification, well, that's your cue to figure it out, you know. And so that means, you know, if you want to take advantage of one of our free consults, that's an option. If you want to schedule one of those consult appointments with your own AME, that would be a good time to do that. But I think, you know, filling out that form in a really kind of brutal honesty with, you know, with yourself. And if you start seeing some items that are, you know, ticked over in the, you know, in that yes column, well, then good chance to, you know, to look into it. Something important on that, there's question 18X on the MedExpress application. And that is the catch-all question. So they ask a whole bunch of very specific questions about, you know, chronic and severe headaches and heart problems and intestinal problems and all of this. And then you get to the end and there's two questions. There's one that is any other illness, disability, surgery. And then there's another one about disabilities. And that trips so many people up because at that point it's the catch-all and they're asking for anything else we didn't bother to cover before this. So,
okay, hot tip. I had shoulder surgery, I don't know, 8 years ago, 9 years ago, sports injury. I get that MedExpress, and for me, I got one more year that I'm doing it once a year. I can't remember when I did that frickin' surgery because it's been so long and it's a blank form every year. What do you use to keep track of what you've put on there so that there's consistency from one year to the next?
Yeah, wouldn't it be great if when you logged in, the answers that you've been providing for the last 20 years actually carried forward?
Like populated. Yeah.
And it's funny, actually, I've talked to some people at the FAA who are in the medical certification division who that's one of their biggest pet peeves. And so I think for the FAA's perspective, they're working to come up with a technological solution.
That's great.
My advice, though, so you can write to the FAA. It's FAA Form 8065-2. Which is a request for your airman medical file. And it takes them several weeks to get it. But then what you get in the mail is every single medical certificate application you ever submitted. And if you're old enough, it goes back to the handwritten form you had to fill out in the doctor's office. So, but that at least lets you know what you've told them in the past, you know, and then, you know, so what I say is, you know, if you're not sure what you put on there in the past, we'll get the information so you can at least be consistent, you know, and then,
is there a website for this? How do you do it?
There is, yeah. Yeah, I can, and we can, I can get that to you offline, but it's a handy little form.
It's in the show notes, people.
You've got to mail it or fax it. There's no online submission option, right. But it's great. So, you know, what you've at least told them in the past, because
we'll
you know,
we'll have a 1 hour episode on how to send a fax after this.
And for our Gen Z crowd,
you know, so what I said, you know, get all your past medical records together, get your FAA file together, you know.
That's actually something I need to do, because I can't remember what I put on my, and will that raise a red flag if I, let's say for this year, I forgot to put the surgery down and they've seen it come in for year after year. And then all of a sudden my MedExpress form comes in, and, you know, they get this year's and they go, well, wait a second, what happened to the surgery?
So probably not, but let me answer your original question first. So, you know, once you have all that information, what I generally recommend is, and I had to do the same thing. Get all that information and just consolidate it onto one expertly crafted, comprehensive MedExpress application, right? And then when you submit your MedExpress application, you get a chance where you can download that as a PDF and then just save that in a good place, you know, electronically, ideally, because then you go back in 6 months and a year, you're not having to remember 3 years worth of medical history. You only have to fill in the intervening 6 months or 12 months or whatever it is. And so for my application now, every time I fill out MedExpress, you know, I go in, I start my application, and then I literally pull up the PDF document in another window, and I look down the column, I check, I don't even read the form anymore. I check yes to the same boxes. I cut and paste my answers from the year before. I make sure I add any new stuff, and then I submit it. I download that new document, and then I use that one when I go in for the next exam.
That's great.
So that's what I do for my, you know, to maintain my own, you know, my own medical. And I think that works pretty well for most people once they get in the routine. Now, to the second part of your question, what happens if you've been reporting something one way and then, you know, you change it and you omit something or don't have it on the, you know, on the next one? Honestly, as much as people like to hate the FAA, what they're really looking for is, you know, is a good faith effort to disclose this stuff. And I think that's one of the reasons they ask about, you know, they ask about medications and they ask about medical history and they ask about 3-year visits, because it's very common that I see people list a medication and then not list the condition that they're treating with it. Or they list a doctor's visit and clearly say what the condition was for, but then forget to list that in the medical history question. And so you're not going to get referred to legal enforcement because, you know, you talked about a medication, you didn't check yes to an item in 18X. You should try to make it internally consistent, but as long as you're making a good faith effort and what you omit isn't material to the certification decision. So if you leave out the heart attack, big deal, right? If you leave out the surgery you had 5 years ago and told about for the last 4 years, not that big a deal.
Okay. Great to know.
I want to get to some stats that kind of help people kind of understand the biggest things, I mean, that disqualify you from your medical. I mean, do you know some statistics around, like, what is the number one thing that disqualifies pilots from their medical? Is there like one thing that is the number one thing that just axes people?
I think like permanently disqualifies people,
or just yeah permanent disqualifiers.
Well, it's kind of a difficult question to answer, because truth be told, if you can get a handle on your medical conditions and treat them well, you can almost universally get back to flying airplanes. And that's, you know, and I can think of a couple clients who have had, like, in the same person, who have experienced major cardiovascular complications to the point of stroke, had sleep apnea and a mental health, you know, condition thrown into the mix, and didn't happen right away, but they kind of got back to, you know, got everything under control and were able to successfully qualify for a medical certificate because, you know, and I fully believe they're very safe to be flying, probably healthier than they were, you know, before all that stuff was identified. So generally speaking, there's very few things that absolutely positively disqualify you. Now, things that's very hard to come back from, if you have a major head injury with an intracranial bleed, there's a long wait time you have to observe for that, up to 5 years or more, depending on the severity of the injury. If you've experienced seizures, that's another one that is, there's a very long wait period, if you can get back at all, that's a major one. new onset type 1 diabetes where you have to do insulin injections is much more possible now. We've had a number of clients who have made it through and are certified and flying on the FAA's type 1 diabetes protocol. But that's one of the more difficult ones. And then substance abuse is another big issue. You know, so people who are newly diagnosed with as an alcoholic or have a multiple DUIs with high levels of BACs, the HIMSS process is kind of its own beast. There is a pathway back, but it's very labor intensive and quite lengthy. So, you know, kind of a long-winded answer, right? But I think to answer your question, for people who are able to qualify for a medical certificate at some point in their life and then develop something later on, I think cardiovascular issues and heart conditions are the most common thing that trips people up. Although most of those people are able to eventually get their medical certificate back, as long as they're still willing to stay engaged with the process and pursue their medical treatment to a point that they are safe to fly.
If you don't mind, I'd like to switch gears to functional health. That's a hot topic these days. Everybody listens to Huberman. There's a lot of companies popping up that do blood work. So having a primary care doctor, obviously first step, checking blood pressure, cholesterol, cancer screening, heart. What about when it comes to, you know, doing a 100 panel blood work every 6 or 12 months on like function health or whatever? There's dozens of these new companies popping up. What are your thoughts on those?
Controversial question.
That's okay.
And I think
let's get into it.
I think it goes back to what we're talking about with the cardiac CTs, right? It's fine to ask those questions and it's fine to go, digging through all of your labs and imaging with the fine tooth comb. And, as medicine evolves, there'll probably be new, genetic tests and all sorts of a lot more fidelity that you can bring into that equation. I think when it gets to from an FAA perspective, if you do all that and now you identify a cancer 5 or 10 years before you would have otherwise, or before what it would have become an issue from a safety perspective, well, now you're obligated to treat it and you're obligated to report it to the FAA and you're obligated to go through their certification protocol to start flying again. And so I think what I see commonly in for functional medicine, under that umbrella, and that term is so diverse, it's kind of an evolving field. But what I see commonly for males is, and for females to some extent, is some form of hormone replacement, right? So, supplemental testosterone is a big one. A lot of people will start, will get sleep medications for it, or low doses of mental health medications, for instance, or even thyroid medication for conditions that don't really meet, the clinical guidelines that would suggest that you need treatment for it. Well, from an FAA perspective, whether or not you really meet the clinical guidelines, if you are taking a thyroid medication or you're taking testosterone or you're doing estrogen replacement or you're, taking a pill to help with your mental health to kind of take the edge off, as some people will say, well, they're not going to treat it like you're doing some functional medicine technique. They're going to treat it as though you have the FDA labeled indication for that, for that medication you're taking. And so you're just obligated to comply with their protocols to keep flying.
That's interesting. Ryan, what are your thoughts on that?
What are my thoughts?
No, I was asking Ryan. Ryan,
I turn it back on you, Tate. Yeah, what are your thoughts?
I don't know.
I want to hear your thoughts first.
I think it's a shame. I think it goes back to what we were saying at the very beginning of the episode, which is people are scared to really dig into health because exactly what you're saying. Yeah, because now I have to report it to the FAA. So a lot of this stuff and I think that you can take it to the positive or you can take it to the negative, where some people are, I don't know if it's, you can say that it's a healthy thing to be taking a low dosage of antidepressants just to take the edge off. That's not something that really resonates with me, but I don't know, having a 100 panel blood test to identify a cancer 5 or 10 years early, that sounds like a really good thing. That is an awesome evolution of forward-looking medicine and preventative medicine rather than doctors being we call it sick care instead of health care, right? It's like you don't go to a doctor until you're sick. I love the idea of getting ahead of stuff and knowing ahead of time so that you can catch it and so that we can live longer, better, healthier lives. And it's a shame that the FAA isn't a little bit further along. I know that we're getting close on time. Maybe you can speak to some of the changes that are occurring, because you mentioned that earlier, that the FAA is catching up. So where are the bright spots here?
I do want to circle back to what you just said, because I think the FAA gets a bad rap, you know, and people think, well, now that I have to report this to the FAA, it's going to result in some delay with my medical certification. And for the most part, that's really not true. Right. Like if you want to go down the pathway of really trying to lean into your preventive medical care and identify things early and do your, whether it's 100, 200 or how many points that blood panel you're going to do or the cardiac CT, chances are it's going to be just fine. And if they don't identify anything, then you don't have to report it. And if they do identify something, you know, there's all sorts of ways where you can expedite that, you know, expedite that certification. And really all they're looking for, if you identify a condition, they just want you to treat it and they just want you to stay healthy. And that's actually one of the things I like about being an AME, because for the most part, having that, you know, the FAA has a stick and a carrot, right? They're going to, if you can pass their metrics, you're going to get your certificate. And if you don't, well then, you know, you're in the holding pattern and you may not be able to fly professionally or recreationally for, you know, till you sort it all out. But the great thing is they really don't ask you to do anything other than what your doctors are probably recommending anyway. It's just that non-pilots don't follow the advice. And so, you know, as a pilot, yeah, go do the testing. And then when you get the results, follow your doctor's advice. And if you do that, chances are you're not, yeah, you have to tell the FAA about it, but chances are it's not going to be a big deal. You just have to have the notes that say, yeah, my doctor's treating it and my doctor thinks I'm okay and he thinks I'm safe. So where's the FAA getting it right? So there's a program called the CACI program, C-A-C-I, that's conditions that AMEs can issue. And so, you know, this list is up to 20 plus conditions, but the really common ones on that list, hypertension, asthma, hypothyroidism, arthritis, testicular cancer, breast cancer, prostate cancer. There's a whole laundry list of these things that are, you know, all these things that we're talking about in this episode, trying to identify early. And all of those conditions, you know, the significance of the, you know, conditions AMEs can issue is that you show up to your AME, if you do that due diligence we've been talking about, and you have the documentation in hand that says, yeah, he had prostate cancer, it's been treated. She had breast cancer, it's been treated. He has high blood pressure, it's well controlled. If you bring that, your AME can hand you your certificate just like he always did, and there's no delay that happens there whatsoever. And so I think the CACI program is an example where they've really tried to give AMEs a lot more autonomy to be able to do that. So it's important that you find a good AME who's familiar with those protocols, right? Not all AMEs are going to do that, but the FAA has given them the autonomy to do that. And they're expanding it into the mental health stuff as well.
If somebody's switching AMEs, looking for a new AME, they call, what are some questions they can ask that physician or that office to find out whether they're up to speed on these new regs?
Yeah, definitely. I think calling around and shopping around for a good AME is so important. You know, so I think questions you want to ask, right? Do you offer consult appointments? You know, I think that's probably the biggest one. You know, an AME who's willing to sit down with you separately from your certification exam and walk you through what the process is like. So important. So I think that's probably the biggest single question you can ask. Beyond that, what's that?
No, I was going to say, and take getting back to my opinion on what we just discussed, I think I tend to agree with Dan. It seems like what can go wrong, you know, as long as you prevent it, you know, a lot could go wrong. That scares me a little bit. And I know a lot of listeners are probably a little bit afraid, you know, when we talk about, you know, hey, well, yeah, just go get the test and then just do what it says to do and then you'll be fine. And then until you're not, and then you're in this entanglement. And that's the fear that I can't get around, right? Which is the test result is bad and now I'm out of a job. So now I have a problem with my heart and I'm out of a job. So I just won't do anything. which is a terrible approach, right? At the end of the day, you should know what is wrong with you. But like, let's be honest, like that's what's going through our minds is I don't want to lose my job. So I don't want to find out. It's almost like the attitude of going through a check ride back in the day, right? Before AQP, when we were raised in these, don't ask any questions. You know, we're not trying to learn anything. Let's just get through our check ride and hopefully you can withstand the gauntlet and you'll make it out the other side. And you got your license for another year or whatever, right? That's kind of the mindset of that's kind of how I feel when I go in from medical. I'm like, don't say anything. Don't talk to anybody. Just keep your head down, fill it out, you know, be honest about it and just get your things stamped and, you know, run to the parking lot and drive out of there as fast as you can. And I think, you know, I have a balanced perspective of like, you know, some realities of getting older and seeing friends go through issues and then them say, please God, go get a CT scan, go do preventative things so that, you know, you're not surprised by these things that were preventable to Dan's point, which is like, hey, you've got this issue, go treat it. And then you won't have this bad thing happen. And I would probably say I'm a little bit more in the camp of I just kind of want to know and go treat it than find out the hard way. And I think we owe it to our passengers and we owe it to ourselves to treat ourselves, you know, to get that. And I think that's the intention. And I'm excited, you know, with the perspective of, okay, some AMEs are more on board with like, and can use their discretions and flex their muscles a little bit on your behalf. Like, hey, he had that thing, but it was treated. It's gone. Like, we're not talking about it and push back on the FAA. And I'm glad to hear the FAA is kind of thawing out their older policies on it. So I think that's why I love this, the question you asked, Tate, which is like, how do you like find these people? How do you like make sure that you're in an AME that's going to fight for you? And I feel like all of my AMEs always have been like that. They've always been kind of like, oh no, you're fine. That was dealt with. You don't need to, you know, we're not talking, you know, it's like, we don't need to get into that. You know, they kind of fight for you almost like a PIC would as a commander of their ship, right? Like, no, I'm the captain. This is what we're going to do. I know my rights and I know my authority and I'm going to do it, right? Like that's kind of the eye of the tiger that you want in your AME. And it protects you on both sides. It protects you from some frivolous thing hanging up your medical exam. It also gives you the freedom and flexibility to go get this test, this preventative test that you may be seeking. So now you feel really good. So I think, Tate, your question's the $1 million question, like get a good AME.
And so on that note, yeah. I wanted to hear the rest of the things to ask that AME, right? So
do you do consultations? And then, you know, if you're healthy, right, it doesn't matter. You go see any AME. So, you know, so ask right. them pointedly, like, hey, I have high blood pressure. What do you need to see from me from that? You know, and you probably have some idea what those requirements are. And if he can't tell you, then probably not the right guy. You know, so ask him probing questions about your actual history. And, you know, if he inspires you with confidence because you can answer those questions correctly, then that's great. You know,
what about khaki? Would it be demeaning to ask? Are you aware of the khaki stuff?
I don't know. I'm perfectly happy. If somebody asked me that question, I don't take any offense to it. Maybe somebody else might feel that was demeaning.
If I was for style points,
I would probably ask about specific questions. So
okay.
Asthma is a khaki condition. Hey, I have asthma. What do I need to bring to the appointment in order for you to issue my certificate? You know, and if he says that I can't issue your certificate, well, then clearly doesn't know about the khaki program and you can move on, you know?
Excellent.
But I think, you know, this is one of the things that kind of sets us at Wingman Med apart is where, you know, we're not so focused on the exam, right? So I do exams. You want to come, if you're in San Diego and you want to come see me for class 1, 2, or 3 medical certificate or your HIMSS application, then great. We could work together face to face. But, you know, we also, you know, we offer free consultations so people can call us and ask, hey, what, you know, they can bounce that off of us. So you can come to us with your laundry list of conditions that you want to vet against an AME and we can have a conversation about, hey, this is what he ought to say. This is what he should be telling you. If it's something different, then don't do it. Or, you know, we have a subscription service where, you know, rather than seeing you face to face for your exam, we can work with you over time so that if you do develop new conditions, then we can help coach you through that so that you show up to your AME with everything they need and they don't have to know.
And we've been at the Pilot Network Conference, TPNX, for the last few years running. We had a great conversation. this last year in April about how you help military folks who might be technically disabled vets, right? Because they have some neck issue or whatever. And you help because you speak FAA and you speak pilot and you speak medicine. You can tie that bridge where, I mean, that's hugely valuable to our group. So thanks so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom.
Absolutely. Great seeing you guys again.
Dan, thank you so much. We will link to all of that in the show notes. Check out the MedExpress simulator. Super cool. Feel free to reach out to Dan. We'll link to it in the show notes. Thank you again, my friend. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, guys. Had a great time.
Cheers.